Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you? And where you should not. For my ally is the Force. And the powerful ally it is. Life leads it. Makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us. And binds us. Luminous beings shall we. Not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you. You. Between you. Me. Everywhere. Yes.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, another Star Wars special. That's right, we are here to talk about The Rise of Skywalker. I am Dave Gonzalez, and before I joined the Resistance, I was a blue milk bartender.
My name is Jordan Robinson. Before I joined the Resistance, I was a powder grinder for the Pasana Burning Man celebration.
And I'm Neil Miller, and before I joined the Resistance, I was a First Order chef, because you know they had chefs in the First Order.
And we're here to talk about the final film in the Skywalker saga. You might have noticed we put a pause on rewatching Lost here on the Storm Lost Rewatch podcast, which we will be picking up in 2020 to talk about Star Wars, because The Rise of Skywalker is out as of now when you've heard this podcast. It is episode 9. It brings an end to the sequel trilogy, which we reviewed and talked about in our last episode. And it is a lot of movie, so we are going to talk about it in our normal fashion. If this is your first time joining us, we split our podcast into two sections. One is spoiler-free. We call it The Calm. That's going to be right up here at the front after we do some housekeeping and talking. And then there will be a section called The Storm. That is going to be all spoilers, and that is meant for you to listen to after you have seen The Rise of Skywalker for yourself. The Storm is going to be the longer section because this is a podcast. It lives forever on the internet. People are going to want to come back having seen The Rise of Skywalker. But you could check down on your friendly podcast device right now to look at the time codes to make sure you don't go too far, too fast, and hyperspace jump somewhere you don't need to be. And certainly don't get tracked through your hyperspace jumping. We know that turns out bad. Joanna, where could people find us and contribute to us and, you know, talk back to us about their feelings when they see The Rise of Skywalker?
Well, we've got this Patreon. I don't know if you've heard of it. But if you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, which is what our podcast used to be, you can contribute to our Patreon. And $1 alone gets you access to our Slack, which is just, you know, basically a chat room with a bunch of our listeners in there. They talk about all kinds of things. They've been talking about a lot of Star Wars recently, but you know, there's other stuff going on. They're talking His Dark Materials, The Mandalorian, wrapping up Watchmen, all kinds of stuff that you wish we were talking about all the time. They are talking about in there. So, you might want to hop on over. It's a bunch of really cool, like-minded people, and you might want to talk to them, you know, to process your Rise of Skywalker feelings. But that is something I suggest you do. I also suggest you go to stormpodcast.com, our beautiful website designed by our beautiful producer, Diana. And there's a bunch of information there. You can find out our schedule, all kinds of stuff. But new on the website, if you go to the little button at the top, stormpodcast.com, there's a little button on top that says merch. Click on there. You'll see our Storm Podcast pin. We have a very extremely limited run of these pins that are left over from our live show in Boulder, Colorado. And you can hop on to stormpodcast.com. They're only $15, these great enamel pins. I've been getting a lot of compliments on mine. And we will ship those out to you. You know, you won't get them before the holidays, but, you know, sometime in the new year, you can have them. They're very Star Wars-y. They're very fun. So, you know, if you want that,
I look,
you can go
excellent.
There.
I look like your perfect V for Vendetta Sith that's coming for all your institutions.
And then, you know, we used to read a lot of reviews on this podcast, and we haven't been, but I just thought I'd read a couple, you know, just to remind you guys to rate and review us on iTunes, if you'd be so kind. The first review is from Jay Schlepp, who wrote 5 stars. I like the show. Simple, efficient, intelligent.
You can be anything. You should be efficient.
I appreciate you for that review. And then this one is 4 stars. It's in reference, you know, because after this, we're headed back to Lost. We're going to take a break. This is our last show of 2020. We might have some bonus stuff. I'm probably going to talk to Kristen Russo again before the end of the year. But, you know, this is our last official Storm podcast for 2020, 2019, and we'll be back in 2020 talking about the TV show Lost again. So this review says Lost fans will enjoy 4 stars. Overall, I enjoy listening to the Storm. The hosts have good chemistry and have taken the time to create a place for Lost fans and newbies to come together again. I will continue to listen. One note, I generally enjoy the interviews and the Storm section the most. The more you can do there, the better. Thank you and namaste. So we will be, making our way back to the world of Lost starting in the new year, with a season 2 episode, The Other 48 Days, I believe it's called.
Yeah, lore heavy season 2. So it will be a good continuing season for Storm, I hope.
So, yeah. So, you know, thank you for listening all through 2019. We really appreciate you. We'd love to have you even more in our community if you want to join the Slack to talk about Lost in the new year and all other things. That's all the stuff I wanted to say. Oh, one last thing. You can email us if you need to and want to about your Lost thoughts, your Star Wars thoughts, whatever it may be, at hosts at stormpodcast.com. Nailed it. Did it.
Nailed it the first time.
Did I?
Yeah.
Kind of.
You technically didn't finish. Yeah. Totally, yeah.
There you go. I did it.
Excellent. That means it is now time to talk about The Rise of Skywalker, the 8th episode in the Skywalker saga. That means we're not counting Solo, Star Wars Story, and Rogue One as part relevant to this saga. And I think the only reason I want to bring that up is Rise of Skywalker does a lot more than I think it needed to make you feel like this is a conclusion to a 9-movie saga. There are things from the prequel trilogy that seem relevant to me after having seen it. There are things from the original trilogy that definitely seem relevant, even from the trailers, that should be pretty obvious that some things are coming back. But then it also manages to sort of wrap up what The Force Awakens started, I think would be a good way of summing up that we are definitely in the 9th episode of a 9-film series that also is concerned with being a trilogy capper. It's an interesting position to be in. I mean, like, really only in terms of serialized storytelling, like something like the X-Men animated series might fall into something like this, where it's like, oh, there's a mini series of episodes within a longer series of episodes. Structurally unique, like, wow, basically a half a decade old Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. Neil, what did you think?
Well, Dave. Actually, you know what? I'm not sure yet. I hope to have a more firm grasp on how I feel about the Rise of Skywalker by the end of this discussion, actually. So that'll be fascinating. I will say that, like, in general, I liked it, the cut of its jib. I liked its energy and its sort of pace. And the vibe of it felt fun, entertaining. But I feel like that's also exactly what you would expect from J.J. Abrams. So I felt like it was like exactly the movie I should have expected maybe from the director of The Force Awakens. So yeah, I think I probably liked it. Probably. We'll see. We'll see if that stands.
All right, we got a hesitance, probably liked it. Joanna, you and I got to see it together, so I have a vague idea of what you're going to say. But like Neil's saying, with Star Wars movies, occasionally you have to solidify your opinion. So, Joanna, what did you think of Rise of Skywalker?
I did not like it, but I like there are things I did like in it. And is it where I get to drop my like really great metaphor on you?
Yeah, if you want.
I'm sorry, fellas. I cheated on you, and I talked about this movie already with Anthony Bresnikan for the Little Gold Men podcast with Vanity Fair. And Anthony and I together like came up with this metaphor of like what we feel like this trilogy is, and here's the complicated back and forth of J.J. Abrams handing the trilogy off to Ryan and then Ryan having to hand it back to J.J. Like, if he had handed it, I mean, I didn't want to call in Trevor a movie, but like, if Ryan had handed it on to a third person, I think this would look more like an arc of some sort. But what it looks like instead is that J.J. lays a foundation for something. And Ryan's like, oh, that's a pretty cool foundation. I think this is what the house would look like that was built on top of that foundation. And J.J. goes, wrong. The house looks like this, and just drops his house and like just right on top of Ryan's house. Doesn't smush Ryan's house. It's just like, now there's a second story, but it's another house, and it's the one that JJ thinks better fits the foundation, but they're stacked on top of each other now, and so now you have a mess, whereas before you had something that like people didn't agree about, but at least it was like foundation house, okay. Now it's like, and now we got this other what's going on now. So to belabor that metaphor, I enjoyed some of the rooms in this dumb house that J.J. Abrams has built. There are some rooms I enjoyed, some moments I enjoyed. Which is not true for every Star Wars. So, you know, great acting can pull you through a lot of things, but overall I just found this really overcrowded, really frenetic, and a really disappointing punch down, it feels like, at The Last Jedi. So, yeah.
I don't completely disagree with that. My initial thoughts were more along, like, this is returning Star Wars to a much more serialized structure, but in a traditional way. It's interesting that, like, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the whole, like, George Lucas tries to bring the serials of America back to America as, like, blockbusters, works to a certain extent, but I think it's also become part of what we consider, like, an 80s Amblin-like nostalgia sort of formula, and the idea that Star Wars should always keep moving, I think, is correct. I think that's what it sort of makes it the cool subversion in The Last Jedi is the space race where no one can use hyperdrives. It's something different than we're used to seeing, but it is technically all our characters are still on the move trying to find something, a la Han and Leia, you know, skipping around trying to avoid the Empire while Luke was trading on Dagobah. This one returns it much more to a serial in the sense that each one of these tiny episodes feels sort of self-contained, but I think that really detracts from the whole. This feels like it could be a bunch of Clone Wars and Rebels episodes and quests slapped together. And also it feels like the lore is much more like television, where they are waiting for another chapter to come in and fill in the blanks of
the series finale. There was like, we were in the middle of one of Rey's quests, one of her like 9 quests in the film. And I was like, oh, I'm watching TV, but they only have 2.5 hours to do it. Okay.
I think it's also become interesting why, as The Mandalorian has also been sort of serialized and is now sort of coming together to bring its plot together. Not that we're going to talk about that, because maybe you're not watching The Mandalorian for some reason. Maybe you're waiting until it's all on Disney Plus. That's what you're doing. That's the smart thing. Because then you only have to pay for a month. It is also reminding us that, like, threads need to kind of come together, or otherwise Star Wars has the capability of feeling like it's flailing. Which is, you know, both, it has its positives in something like TV, because you could do deep dives into weird parts of Star Wars, or have, like, you know, a train heist without having to, like, make your whole movie stop for a train heist a la Solo. But I don't think it works for Rise of Skywalker, because it plays like they sat down in a room. I don't know who they is. There are 4 writers credited on this movie. Let's say they all did the same process, because it feels like it. And they wrote down everything they wanted to see. And half of that was stuff to make people happy because they were reading press about The Last Jedi, and then they just put it all into the movie. which is entertaining. It's a ride of a movie that builds to a third act that I was enjoying when I watched it, and I look forward to seeing it again tomorrow when you guys actually hear this podcast. But that ride is made to distract you from things, because once you start poking at the questions you're going to have after Rise of the Skywalker, I think the movie doesn't do a great job at holding together. But yeah, you know, thrill ride movies are thrill ride movies that and do work for lots of people. And I know that I'm, and as you evolved, if you've listened to our previous Star Wars coverage, know that I'm like a Star Wars super geek. Like, of course I'm going to have gripes with things, because the Rise of Skywalker expands the scale to an epic place that I think Last Jedi and The Force Awakens were more concerned with making sure we were rooted in these characters. The Force Awakens because they were new, and The Last Jedi because it I think it functioned really well to deepen those characters. Rise of Skywalker feels like it's on rails sometimes, in the sense that once it becomes apparent where these things are going, with a couple notable exceptions that do come off as surprises, a lot of it just sort of plays out, and you watch it, and it looks great, and some great technical achievements, and John Williams shows up for 95% of the movie. So it's definitely a Star Wars. It's a lot of Star Wars. Oh, you don't think so?
Hum me the, like, really the big, like, John Williams theme of this movie.
The big John Williams theme of this movie is combining all the other John Williams themes of this movie at the right moment. And the reason I say it's 95% effective is because he perverts Duel of the Fates like I asked him to psychically at one part of the movie. The 5% that is unsuccessful is at one point there's a large rally to the resistance moment that is begging for its own theme. And it gets it, and it's meh. But yeah. All the returning themes, I think, are executed very well. I really like the slight movements Ray's theme makes in and out of some other ones. Yeah. I'm okay with it.
I like the return of Rey's theme, my favorite theme of Star Wars, but I wish there had been like something new, and like we could be like, oh yeah, The Rise of Skywalker, that tune from that movie. Anyway, Neil, did we lose you? How are you doing?
No, I'm good. You guys are making excellent points all over the place on this movie.
Can I talk about your beard for a second?
Sure.
I'm going to be very careful about this. All right. So,
yeah, this is a tough one.
We can't talk about this really in the calm, but we're going to talk about it a little bit, which is that you may recall that we made a bet, we three hosts, that only had consequences for Neil and involved Neil having to shave his beard or not having to shave his beard based on something happening in the movie or not happening. We have different memories of what the terms of that bet was and what the wording was. And so before we decide, you know, how this all shakes out, we are trying to go back through the episodes and find the exact wording. If you guys happen to remember, which episode that was where we discussed it, or you happen to find the wording and want to send us like what we said or what the audio was or whatever, hostedstormpodcast.com. We'd really appreciate it. We're trying to nail that down and see if Neil has to shave all the hair off his face.
I feel like where my investigation so far has led is that it's possible this bet was created in a hotel room at a Con of Thrones.
Yeah, we think maybe it was like made. I think here's what I think happened. I think it was made at Con of Thrones in May 2018. We have a tweet from Dave Gonzalez in May 2018 about the beard bet. Mm-hmm. I think it was made in a hotel room at Con of Thrones in May 2018. But I think it was clarified on air, because I definitely remember asking you, wait, like to nail down the language so that we all agreed. I just forgot to like write down what it is.
I remember doing my due diligence, I swear.
Yeah. So on one podcast somewhere after May 2018, we asked Neil to clarify what he means by the bet, and we would like to figure out what exactly that was so that we can figure out if Neil has to feel the cold winter air on his
lower. I would also like to make it clear that it's just you guys who need the clarification.
Neil's standing strong in his truth.
As we will discuss in the storm, I'm pretty clear on the results of the bet.
Okay. Is there anything particular that we need to highlight spoiler-free, or that we feel like can be highlighted spoiler-free before we rank the sequel trilogy, I should say? No? Good. Mm. We're not. It's hard to talk about.
This one, yeah, this one's going to be tough because there's a lot of stuff in there. I will say this. I was impressed with the amount of exposition this movie gets done in the first like 10 minutes. It's pretty wild and it's kind of jarring, and go into the movie just understanding that there's a huge data download right at the front there. So, you know, don't be late getting in your seats or anything like that. Not that people who listen to our podcast would, because they're serious people. But you know, just in case you're running late, everybody's busy at this time of year.
Yeah, let me ask you a quick question. Spoiler free. Who is, and if your answer is a spoiler, you have to pick another answer. Spoiler free. Who is your MVP of this movie?
Adam Driver, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, who is the MVP of this movie? I actually think it might be Daisy Ridley.
I also think it's Daisy Ridley, but yeah. Adam Driver is a close second. So
Adam Driver, always great.
I thought you guys were going to pick Babu Frick, and so then I was prepared for my backup, Daisy Ridley. Like, number one, Babu Frick. Number two, Daisy Ridley.
The new characters, there's only two that I remember their names, and that's Babu Frick and Zori Bliss.
Yeah.
So that says
they rule. But, the duo.
The kids. They did pretty good.
Yeah, good job, kids.
The scavenger and the supreme leader.
Mm-hmm.
All right, did we promise to rank all of the sequel trilogy films?
Just the sequel trilogy films, because we hadn't seen Rise of Skywalker, and it seemed weird to rank two films on the podcast. So here we go, ranking the sequel trilogy films from best to worst, or top to bottom, if that's too preferential language for you. Neil, you go first.
I can go first.
Yeah.
I would put at the top The Last Jedi, because I think that, to me, what I prefer to see in movies is things that are weird and take weird chances and ask weird questions. So my preference would be The Last Jedi. I would actually... I'm putting The Rise of Skywalker second, and then Force Awakens. Honestly, they're kind of tied. Let's be honest. I mean, that's how I feel. They're both tied. So mine is Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, and Force Awakens.
Excellent. Joanna, seems like you have a differing opinion.
No, number one, it's The Last Jedi. Number two is The Force Awakens. And then, like, The Rise of Skywalker. Like, down below. Many, many spaces below.
It's weird because I'm like, that's also fair. Based on the movie I watched, I'm like, oh yeah, some people aren't going to like this.
Mine's the same order, but without the but-ahs, because, you know, it's the Return of the Jedi of the trilogy.
But I like Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi has some great moments. But,
it's extremely Return of the Jedi.
No, yeah. I know it's extremely Return of the Jedi, but like Return of the Jedi, I think, is a much better film than Rise of Skywalker. Like, also, you might not like that there are cute teddy bears and stuff like that, but at least it's like just got a coherent, propulsive, like, forward motion kind of thing. And there aren't huge. There's one big revelation in that movie, but it's not like, it's not what we're, what all the info download we're trying to deal with is. And it's not busy trying to retcon what came before it either. So, you know. Right? No?
Yeah.
Possibly.
No.
I mean, there's a lot of concepts that are introduced in Return of the Jedi that we take for granted as like part of Star Wars now, but we'll,
like what?
Well, we'll be getting to them later because
okay. We
gotta talk about those right after we do this.
Hiding out on an island like Octo means a whole lot of downtime at home. If you're a Porgoner like me, hiding out during the long winter months means a whole lot of downtime at home. If you're a cat owner like me, you might be apprehensive about being within no shot of a litter box for hours on end, especially when it's due for a refresh. Thanks to Pretty Litter, I have odorless litter delivered right to my door.
Have the absolute power of Pretty Litter, because Pretty Litter is kitty litter reinvented. Unlike traditional litter, Pretty Litter's super light crystals trap odor and released moisture, resulting in dry, low-maintenance litter that doesn't smell. And Pretty Litter is virtually dust-free because it's manufactured with a specialized de-dusting process. Less dust, no fuss. Pretty Litter also spares my sanity and storage space. It's shipped in a small, lightweight bag that lasts an entire month. No more bulky containers or frequent trips to the store or dangerously falling down in the snow because you're hauling kitty litter. But above all else, here's why Pretty Litter is a pet parent's hero. It is a health indicator. Pretty Litter monitors my cat's health by changing colors when it detects potential underlying issues. You won't find that kind of innovation in a conventional litter.
Dear listeners, you can't change the weather, but you can change your kitty litter. Make the switch like we did today. Go to prettylitter.com and use promo code STORM for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code STORM.
Now is the time on the podcast where we love to thank our Patreon subscribers. You heard us talk about the Patreon at the beginning of the episode. This is where people who support us give at the max, I guess not the max level, top level, suggested donation. And we really thank them. There are broom boys and girls. And if you're a Last Jedi fan, you know what that means. So we would like to thank them, starting with a newcomer, Steve Bulvari. We also want to thank Jane Phelps, Christina McMeeset, Brian Latino, Valerie Harvey, Ben Block, Maggie Pollen, Benjamin Jacoby, Matt Hayes, Tiffany Welker, Laura Kaminsky, Crystal Shares Roberts, Ann Ledford, Wendy Marshall, Joseph Johnston, Heather Carpenter, Brenda Moran, Russell Brody, Carrie Labadia, and James Principale, maybe? Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to thank Nell, Samantha Sherburn, Georgia Monroe Cook, Emily, David Colley, Jen Betke, Colby Waddell, Katie Boyd, Michelle Tepper, Jason Allen, Mark Stevenson, Jimmy Luck Taylor, Shante Gonzalez, Clederic Mars, John Shen, Saran Ports, Jennifer Caldwell, Anne Vardaman, Jennifer Trice, and Kristen Butterfield. Thank you very much.
Now I would like to thank the following fine humans. Rosa, Jana Gardner, Jamie Smith. Oh, you guys got to help me with this next one. David G. We nailed it that time. Melissa Beerley, Jan Carlo, Lord of the Soups, Warden of the Grill. Stephen Miller, William Eggert, Susan Shirley, Weed Detective, Molly Callahan, Gabriel Buxco, Pat Jukins, Angelica Cotto, Lauren Reed, Grace O'Keefe, Jefferson Grubbs, Catherine Davis, Dickie Moe, and the Ghost of Ghost. Thank you all so very much for being part of the Small Council.
Ghost is dead? And we're back, and you have seen Rise of Skywalker, or just don't care about spoilers, like some sort of anarchist, like Joker, loving the second Joker movie anarchist. Ugh. Anyway, we're back.
Do you think that's getting more popular or less popular, like being into the spoilers? I feel like more people are doing it, which makes it less safe.
I think maybe more people are doing it. I'm very happy with the bend in the life of our podcast into the execution is king. Because if you are a person who loves spoilers, and a Patreon subscriber, we actually had a Star Wars spoiler special where I read some Reddit leaks to Joanna that I thought were fairly accurate, and little did I know at the time, where basically entirely accurate of how the movie was before reshoots. And then there was a second batch of leaks released by the same guy, Jedi Praxis on Reddit, that had the reshoot leaks. So by the time I got to sit down to watch this movie, I had like a pretty good idea of what I thought it was, and just watched it play out, which was a good, I think, barometer for me, at least, because I am definitely a execution is key person. And even going to the movie, I was talking to Joanna about what from the leaks was still unclear and how did we think they were going to pull it off, and some of the things they did and other the things they did not. But most importantly, there's the death of a major character we need to talk about. Snap Wexley of Black Squadron is blown up and is the most...
What? J.J. Abrams killed off Greg Grunberg again? That's crazy.
The most notable casualty of the final battle against the Final Order.
Dave and I had a bet, a dollar bet, before we went into the movie. He thought a major character that we didn't already know about, because we already knew about... Leia and Ben, that a major character would die, and then Snap died, and he was like, "See?" And I was like, "No, that is not a major character."
There it goes. It's a little bit more complex than that. We were drunkenly watching some Rise of Skywalker footage, and there's some footage of Poe screaming with like light on his face, and I was saying something amongst one of our number who was not into spoilers, being like, isn't it weird that we haven't heard about like anybody dying in the final battle? That could be like a somebody blows up shot. And it was Snap Wexley blows up. So fair, Joanna probably wins. But for those of us that read the Aftermath novels and the Black Squadron comic book series and the new novel that includes Wedge Antilles and Snap Wexley, we know. And goodbye into that sweet night. X-Wing pilot, Temin Wexley.
But also, I'll be expecting my dollar soon. Thank you so much.
Fine.
I just thought it was funny that it was Greg Grunberg again. It's always Greg Grunberg.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then that seems to be like the only casualty besides Rey.
Because there are so many fake-out deaths in this movie. It's one of the things that bothers me the most about this movie.
So many fake-outs.
There are four. As far as I can count. So, you know, I'm not a fan of that. Because you've got Chewie.
The Chewie one is actually pretty egregious.
It's the most egregious. So Chewie.
Because it's like, we just watched him get on a transport and it fly up, and then she like grabs it out of the sky. It's like, how's that not the one?
Then they're like, there was another one behind that rock over there. Okay, so Chewie, bad. Like 3PO sort of had a death scene and it was very emotional. Then it was just like, never mind. And then like Kylo dies, she heals him.
Well, and then Ben Solo dies.
Well, yeah.
I just heard a door close and I'm worried Diana heard that.
And that's how Diana learned the end of Rise of Skywalker.
Leave it in.
You guys say all the rest of the fake out deaths, so she doesn't have to hear me rattle them off.
Well, let's see who else gets faked out. Zori Bliss, because they talk about that planet getting blown up.
Yeah, we see it.
She shows up at the end.
And Babu. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, Babu. I mean, when I say Zori Bliss, assume that I mean both of them.
It's like an ampersand. Right. Zori and Babu.
Yeah. It's the Disney Plus show that should have been out already. Uh-huh. Like, why did they? It's like the Baby Yoda toys. It's like, why did you wait to find out what was going to happen there?
And then last one's Rey. Although yeah. I can't imagine that plays as a fake out necessarily.
And the ultimate fake out, Palpatine. That's a 42-year-old fake out.
But also Ben has another one, right? Because he goes in that pit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Back in the pit.
There's so many.
Oh, also the whole main squad falls into quicksand at one point, which is a very brief fake out, but it's a fake out nonetheless.
Well, and it's so stupid. Like, why would you? What kind of like penny ante amateur bullshit hour? I'm going to put 9 different fake out deaths in my Star Wars movie scripting is this?
It's a whole season of television in a thing. Each one of those is an act break. But if
that happened on TV, we'd be like, we get it. No, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, I mean, and there's especially some weird ones in the movie because the movie undercuts them before the characters know about it. We definitely see Chewie being brought aboard Death Star after we've seen it blow up, but then we cut back to our main trio of characters and they have a hand-holding moment that then is allowed to be played for laughs, but that means you know you're going into that moment without any tension, which seems like a weird storytelling decision. Right before they delete C-3PO's brain, they're like, doesn't R2 have backups? And C-3PO's basically like, I don't trust that fool, which is the most accurate thing he says in the whole movie, but also undercuts the stakes because it's telling you exactly how it's going to be solved. And then the final one that like kind of irked me is Emperor Palpatine, who, like Neil said, did a death fake out like 40 years in the making before blasting Ben Solo down a hole, is like, just like I was blasted down a hole, I will blast you down a hole.
No, he says, remember how I got confused? Because he says, just as I fell, so too shall you. And I thought he was talking about his like moral fall. And you're like, no, Joanna, literally down a hole. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
That very survivable drop down into a hole. It's a weird, it's a odd thing. It's parts of these movies. The weirdest thing, I get the serialized structure and I get trying to put too much in and I get too many MacGuffins. It's just the weird choices to like stitch those together. And like Joanna mentioned in the thing, like plop a house on top of the other thing, like not allow the characters to develop beyond where they were in The Force Awakens necessarily. And in some cases, like, being like Luke Skywalker, being like, treat this weapon with disrespect. And I'm like, bitch, do you know what you were doing at the beginning of the last movie on this very island on that very spot? Do you remember that you ripped off one of your X-Wing's wings to make the door to your hut? Because it seems like it has all four now. Just like odd decisions that it seems like if you went back and checked, somebody would be like, hey, it's actually this. And then you have to go like, not in my movie, it's not. And that seems bad.
That seems like, it seems like shitty. Maybe I've found a new metaphor that I want to use. J.J. Abrams drew
a
portrait.
House on a house not working.
House on a house is great. You must admit, it's fantastic. But maybe it's J.J. Abrams drew a portrait of a lady, let's say. And then Ryan Johnson looked at that lady and was like, I think this is the hat that would best suit that lady. I'm going to put this hat on that lady. And then J.J. goes, no, this hat. It's a hat on a hat, and I don't like it. All right. Anyway, I'm gonna stick with house on a house, but hat on a hat. I don't know. It's in the running. So let's talk about. Okay. So we talked about all the fake out deaths. Can we run through all the MacGuffins, Dave? How many MacGuffins are there?
Well, there's a wayfinder that leads to Exegol, and there's two wayfinders. And in order to find the second wayfinder, we need a dagger that is on a ship that was used by a Jedi hunter, which is a new thing, I guess. I think that's it. Well, that's a term.
Oh,
that
then retreat. Hold on.
Oh, wait,
this is
no. And then Zori Bliss has a metal that allows them to fly anywhere without looking like resistance fighters. And okay. Go ahead, Neil.
I feel like you're missing the most important thing about the dagger.
That it is also
a map.
And a compass. And a compass.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Like some real Goonie shit right there.
Some like triple MacGuffin stuff. Because
line
then...
up the jagged edges of this and it goes, right? Isn't that a Goonies
thing? Yeah.
Yeah, it points with the...
It's the side of a mountain, mm-hmm. The broken mountain. Anyway, and then upon it is an inscription that C-3PO can read... But it's not able to translate because of like galaxy far, far away. Asimov's rule number one: don't talk Sith.
And then
Siths get snitches.
Siths get snitches. And then there's the Leia saber.
Oh yeah,
right.
Sure, yeah. Leia's lightsaber. Didn't see that one coming.
Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a lot of stuff.
Jedi years.
A lot of things.
Those coming either.
The phrase that people have been using a lot that I was like, why don't I know this like movie storytelling phrase? And it's because I realize it's a video game phrase is fetch quest, right?
Yeah.
But there are a bunch of fetch quests in this movie. And like, that's why I just feel like exhausted because like, yeah, you're right that in the original trilogy, you have like Han and Leia like running from the Empire, but they run to like three different places, really just two. And they're not like zigzagging across a million different planets and looking for a million different things. It's just so exhausting, this movie.
Ultimately, that's why this is basically, in my mind, it's Return of the Jedi, but louder. You know, it's just like all the notes. If Return of the Jedi was a song, which is interesting, I've been immersing myself in the mind of George Lucas, which never recommended. To other humans, it's a wild ride with old George. But you know, I've been trying to come up with this question, like, what did George Lucas think Star Wars was about, and then trying to apply that standard to these new movies. And I think that he really thought of it as like composing a symphony over a long period of time, where it was like different pieces of the symphony come, you create different pieces of it. But there are inherent themes. There's inherent, you know, echoes or rhymes, and it all sort of rhymes. And I think that's true of this sequel series in a lot of ways. It very much rhymes with the original trilogy. It's just like way louder than the original trilogy because that's the technology allows it to be louder. The J.J. Abrams nostalgia obsession of it all allows it to be louder. And I don't know. It just, given all of the evidence that I've seen about how people felt as the original trilogy went along, it's like this is sort of exactly the same. And it's pretty wild that somehow happened, you know, 40 years later.
Yeah, now we're going to have Star Peace until the Fire Nation attacks.
According to
Star Peace forever.
Star Peace.
According to someone who would know, who I can't source necessarily, that this is a happy ending, right? For Rey. But it's not a happily ever after. Like the Star Peace, this isn't Star Peace, is what I have been told. All right, let's talk about Empress Palpatine.
Let's talk about Empress Palpatine.
Our good old pal, Empress Palpatine. This is the real sticking point for a lot of people in terms of, like, if you want to talk about the house that JJ smashed down on the other house, because like the bones of Ryan's house, the infrastructure is built on this idea that he has that, like, let's democratize the Force. Let's make it less about exceptionalism and more about, like, everyone can have the Force. Everyone should fight. Everyone has this in them. You could be nobody from nowhere and be the hero of the story. You could be Broom Kid and be the hero of the story. And then JJ's like, nope.
Blood's really important.
No. And, like, throws us a bone by being like, Finn's maybe Force sensitive now. Does that work for you guys? All right. There's still some democracy there. It's Finn suddenly is Force sensitive. But, you know, most importantly, Rey, you people who are mad that a girl is so good at her job, don't worry. She got it from a guy. She inherited it. It's fine. It's passed down through the generations, her power. So
hey, at least yeah, Palpatine used a woman this time, like that actually got to have a husband. Because poor
he's
Shimi,
really diversifying his Sith army.
Yeah, poor Shimi Skywalker had to raise a Palpatine son by herself, and it was horror in slavery.
You mean Rey is the woman at least
Luke,
this time?
Luke Skywalker is. No, I'm saying at least he's the woman who had to have a husband. Like, at least there's a.
No, the son is.
I'm saying instead of using the midichlorians to implant a fetus into a woman, maybe against
into
her will,
Jodie Comer.
There was
into
a loving relationship between two people that bequeathed the child that they loved enough to maybe get away from their crazy grandpa.
But I don't think he, like, made that happen, because wasn't the whole thing that, like, what are you designed to call Palpatine Jr., Neil?
Oh, Brian. This Brian is Brian with a Y, Palpatine.
That Brian, when like it seems like he ran away from his father. They were on the run.
Yeah, no,
like,
they chose like to be no one. That's the way they reverse it in this movie. They chose to be no one because they were literally Palpatines. And that, honestly, that would be like being a Hitler, you know, like after the war. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, but this Hitler Jr. had a girlfriend. And they conceived.
Yeah, he seems like a fairly well-adjusted.
You don't think Rudy Hitler had a girlfriend? No.
Even Hitler had a girlfriend.
Rudolf Hitler? No, I think that my understanding, and we, you know, obviously this is like really hasty, like quick flashback that we see, but like my understanding is that Brian Palpatine has like, does not want anything to do with the Empire, and his hot wife Jodie Comer also wants nothing to do with it, and she and her daughter have matching little bun hair, and Rey's like, in your honor I will wear the same hair my whole life, these three buns that I had as a child, and they like they don't want anything to do with Sith shit. They reject
well,
the
yeah
Sith-iness.
Why do you think the Emperor was always trying to like get a new son? Like, he's like, oh,
so
this
I'm just
Anakin
saying, it's not
guy.
Like, I don't think he's, this is like...
He's better than my shitty adult
I don't think
son.
This is like a... than my shitty... than Brian over there. I don't think that this is like... I don't think this is good old Palpatine's, like, plan, the way that Anakin was his plan. But I think he's like, well, all right, this'll do.
Do you think it could have been a forced dyad if Palpatine didn't create them both?
He didn't even seem to realize that they were.
No, he didn't. But I'm just wondering. See, here's the thing that it bothers me, Dave Gonzalez, about Rise of Skywalker. I don't know what the rules are anymore.
Yep.
It breaks.
I don't know
a
what
bunch.
A force diet
that's
is.
That's a real hot bummer for you, right?
Like, yeah, because it's like they have like when the Wayfinder shows up at the beginning, I'm like, oh, it's a triangle. I'm like a Sith holocron. And then they're like the Sith Wayfinder. I'm like, wait, what first of all, like, why would there be a whole bunch of information about the Sith in the ancient Jedi texts? The Sith come after the Jedi.
Oh, the book is also one. We should have mentioned the book. One of Luke's books.
Luke's notes.
No, yeah, Luke's notes.
No.
Luke was always looking for the Sith planet, and he always knew you were a Palpatine, and so did Leia.
Yeah, because when we met him at... In Last Jedi, he was so still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
See, here's the thing about this movie.
I'm right on top of that row.
that I really like is that I enjoyed it and I had fun with it. But there is also a lot of stuff that's worth dunking on from this movie. So it's a fun movie to talk about in the sense that it's really dumb in places. And I think that's fun. And should be embraced.
Yeah,
end
I think
of story.
I think Flash. Let's talk about Flash Force battle ended up being the most interesting lightsaber battle for me. Not that I dislike Death Star 2 battle. It's just at that point, I think
all of those. Actually, I liked all of the saber battles.
Did I like all the saber battles? Yeah, I guess maybe I was. After the problem with Death Star 2 coming when it does is it's like after the battle in the desert, which I think is my favorite of their showdowns in the movie.
Because oh, yeah. It's that like, one really turns it up.
Yeah, it's all silent. and it's all them, like, he said, like, I'm gonna come turn you to the dark side, and it's the first time he attempts, and she just, like, messes up his tie, and then, obviously, when Rey, you know, reaches up and decides to try to grab the transport and succeeds, that's a huge moment.
It
that
rules.
Works for me. And then yeah. Kylo reaches out and then, like, gets it. J.J. Abrams pulls back and just shows them on either side of the desert playing with this transport, and that works for me. And then the Force yeah. Lightning works for me. That whole sequence, I really, really like. Death Star thing gets a little jumpy, like Force jumpy, which I think just, like, stops grounding it from the performance for me. But by the time it gets, you know, super intense and Leia's reaching out, it's back to working. But the beginning of that, where they're, like, they have to get from the Emperor's throne room to the back to the top of the Death Star so they can get all wet, is confusing and weird to me.
Let's talk about Neil's beard.
Oh, okay.
Because we just, like, sped right through the Palpatines without talking about Neil's beard.
Sure.
Sure. We haven't mentioned Rey's other last name.
Yeah. Sure. So Neil seems to, for some reason, remember that the bet was that Rey would have a last name that we knew, which was never the bet, as far as I'm concerned. And Neil's like, I won the bet twice because she's Rey Palpatine hyphen. She's a double barrel. Palpatine hyphen Skywalker, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like Palpable Walker or
Skywalker.
She's just going to go by RPS.
Skype. sorry. You're funny. Okay, except you're wrong. Because, like, I believe that the bet was, what I believe the bet was Rey's parents are definitely going to be a known character, like Kira or, you know, like a Skywalker or something, you know, like Rey's parents are a known quantity to us. They're somebody. And I'm like, okay, Rey's granddad is somebody, but are her parents someone?
They chose are to be no ones.
Are you trying to, like, sell me on Brian Palpatine as, like, a known quantity of Star Wars? Or Jodie Comer, who is, like, I don't know, what's her name?
Neil, I wish you could have seen my face moment to moment, line to line, with, like, they were nobodies. They chose to be nobodies.
Just and we, like, were like, oh. Beard? No beard? What?
What happened?
I kept looking to my left, which is where my roommate Theo was sitting as we were in this screening, and just stroking my beard really intensely. Like, I can feel the energy.
Lindsay Romaine, friend of the podcast, says she thinks the only reason you like this movie is because you feel like you won a bet.
I think that's entirely possible.
But
I felt really good as I was watching this movie.
This is why we need to change. Well, here's the deal. Regardless of what happens to your beard, here's what I will serve you up on a platter, my friend, which is, you are obviously right, and Dave and I were completely wrong in that you were like, when JJ won't be, I believe the phrasing you use is, JJ won't be able to resist. Right. Now that JJ's on board, he will wreck. And Dave and I were like, no, this is no way is he gonna touch, that would be crazy. And JJ's like, oh, I did it big time. I'm gonna do it a couple times
before the movie's over, just to mess with you.
So, like, you know, fundamentally you're right, but I just want to, like, know what the wording of the bet was and have a little fight about Brian Palpatine. That's what I want to have a fight,
like,
about
the spirit of it was that she will be of a lineage that we're aware of, you know? So, like, the idea at the time was, like, she would be like a Kenobi or Palpatine actually was one of those that I don't feel like came up, because it's like, they're not going to do, they wouldn't do Palpatine. Right. Like, but of course they did that. But yeah, I think the spirit of it was that, and I went back and listened to our Last Jedi episode, and we had this discussion where you guys seem very sure that Rey's parents being no one was sort of integral to the story that this trilogy was telling, and that it was about the fact that the Force could come from anyone, which at the time, I still do agree, would be a really great thing for Star Wars to have done.
It was integral. It was integral to Ryan's house. And
right.
JJ's,
well,
like, in this house, yeah, we don't give a shit.
And then JJ is like, yeah, but I need to do this whole, like, Palpatine thing. Like, I need to. Inside my chest is a mystery box. That inside that mystery box is the need to do this. And it's too much of a question. It was just a little too vague from The Last Jedi, which I think was, you know, that's fair of Ryan to do. There's a lot of stuff that you would do in a second movie of a trilogy to sort of just leave doors open for the next person. But then again, it's very weird to hand stuff back and forth as you make trilogies. Most trilogies, most, you know, runs of television, they kind of exist, you know, the best of them exist under the leadership of like one person or creative team. So it's really interesting to me that a lot of this movie feels like a response to The Last Jedi. Not like a
shitty response.
Yeah, but in ways that are frustrating, in ways that exemplify the frustrations you would have with like a Disney. So like, I know we haven't talked about Rose yet, but we can talk about Rose right now.
Rose
is like not anywhere close to being in this movie.
Yeah.
And that felt very intentional. And now it sort of feels even more intentional given the way the actors were talking about their John experience. Boyega. Where it's like, it just really feels like you guys are like hardcore shitting on Kelly Matran. I didn't expect the movie to feel like that too, where it was like, we don't want her like to be a huge part of this.
I could come with you, but I have to study these old Star Trek plans.
Last chance, Rose. Nope. I don't want to be
it's like,
Wars.
Oh, and we're going to give Finn like a new love interest halfway through the movie.
But also he's definitely still in love with Rey. Like, that's the thing is like, okay, not only that, okay, all of that happens. Okay. You're like, I'm like, okay, this feels like a shitty concession to the fanboys and maybe girls who like did not like Rose and didn't want her in the movie. So they're like, they're trying to, Rose is the perfect example, perfect metaphor for the cowardice of this movie, which is, Let's try to please everyone. So they're like, okay, Rose is still technically in this movie. So you can't say we cut Rose out of the movie. But like, she's not really in the movie. So everyone who hates her, you're happy too, right? Everyone's happy. And I'm like, nope, mm-hmm. I think everyone's pissed. I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, and that's the Disney thing is like, we can thread the needle. We believe that we can thread the needle and make everyone happy.
And they just didn't.
I think there'll be plenty of people who are happy with this movie, but I don't know if it's to me, it's nothing more than a mirrored image of sort of Return of the Jedi, basically.
Follow up.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to take care of Hux's cat now?
I'm pretty sure that cat is dead somewhere on the records of some ship on Exegol, right?
What a bummer. That poor cat.
Man, that poor cat.
The what they did with Hux is so sloppy and stupid. Like, so there's a couple of characters. So like, you know, I don't really ever want to be a person who's like, cut this woman of color from Star Wars, but like Jannara is like not a character that works at all, as far as I'm concerned. She's just there either too much or not enough, you know, and it just like doesn't work for me.
She's Finn's new friend.
Yeah. And then
it felt like she was just like, they just took like Finn's story and were like, this is the lady version.
And then Pride too. What happens with like Admiral Pride or whatever does not work for me as like a character. And I'm just like, why don't you just make that Hux and like keep Rose? And then you don't have to have these two new characters. And I'm like, what are you? What are you? What are you doing here?
I thought the Hux thing was funny, obviously. Cause it was like, oh, they're going to make, as soon as it was like, we have a spy. And then you saw Hux in a room with Richard Grant. It was like, oh, Hux is definitely the traitor here. I understood the Hux thing because I do think that in The Last Jedi and to a lesser extent Force Awakens, they do sort of highlight the tension between Hux and Kylo Ren. So like the fact that Hux would eventually be the lieutenant, the sniveling lieutenant who, you know, is just like, I don't care about if you guys win. I just want Kylo to lose. That kind of tracks with his character to me.
I'm not saying it's out of character. I just think it was like weird and fast and just like done. And Hux has been like, Hux matters. Hux lives matter, man.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I can't argue with wanting more Hux.
I would have rather, if we're doing how you could have made this work with the pieces you have, you make Hux pride and Phasma's back and you just let it be.
Yeah. Although I feel like it would have felt a little too obvious if Pride was the informant.
No.
No, I'm just saying
Phasma was the informant because she like finally comes around to FN-2187 and like doesn't kill him. They have more history than, well, I guess Hux and Poe had some sassy sass in The Last Jedi, but like there are all these character pieces that you have on the table. And obviously, J.J. Abrams doesn't care about The Last Jedi, because otherwise we would have had like some discussion about the fact that Leia repaired the lightsaber at some point.
He cares about like settling things that he felt were still questions in The Last Jedi. Like I feel like they're two movies that are asking completely different questions. And I think that's ultimately one of its problems.
The Rose Finn thing that I alluded to earlier that really bothered me is that like the big thing in The Last Jedi is Finn is going to like ride his little plane down the center of this cannon that he has no chance of stop. It's a suicide mission. And Rose like bumps her thing into him to save him. And it's like, no, that's not what we do. We like, you know, fight to protect the things we love, you know, whatever the great line that Rose has, right? And then in this one, he and his new friend are going to do the exact same thing, which is suicide mission on this, you know, destroyer or whatever. And and Rose is like, okay, bye.
The question The Last Jedi is asking is, should we just kill ourselves for the rebellion? Don't human lives mean something? And this one is just like, the question that I'm left asking is like, when's this franchise going to let Finn kill himself? Because he's no one has tried harder.
It's true. Dave, you mentioned earlier that you felt like the prequels were relevant to this this movie. What in the prequels did you feel like was relevant? Other than Hayden Christensen still whining, for the record. I brought balance to the Force. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to bring to the fore that the rhyming part of each third Star Wars movie is, oh shit, the ugly Emperor. He's not in the first A New Hope at all. He's a hologram in Empire Strikes Back. He shows up and introduces us to Force Lightning in Return of the Jedi. He introduces us to the whole concept that if you like strike him down in anger, you become like a Sith. And then, you know, introduces the whole like master plan concept. And Revenge of the Sith has a big echo of that, because Sidious is revealed in a way that Palpatine can no longer hide when he's scarred by Mace Windu, which, you know, forces his hand to the smallest degree, but was also the grand plan that he had coming up. And we're introduced to the new crazy idea in Revenge of the Sith that Sith can learn to manipulate life itself and conquer death and whatnot. So it doesn't so much surprise me that the surprise of the third movie is, oh shit, Palpatine's back with some new power.
Also, we learn in Sith that you can die because of a bummer.
Yes.
Which I think is kind of relevant here.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there is a...
There's more like...
What do you mean there's more like because of a bummer?
Talking about Padme dying with a broken heart.
But there's a little bit of that in here, but it's more of like they're passing life force back and forth, I guess, sort of like
force
basketball.
Force healing.
I mean, I love I actually really like the force healing, like the first scene when it's like Rey healing the animal that, you know, it's like Rey is the empathetic answer that the Force has come up with to the, you know, war, total control of the Empire, which I think that's interesting, because even though they're doing the same, this one is the chosen one story, like this is the chosen one who has to fix the balance or whatever the hell Luke Skywalker was supposed to be doing there, is that they actually did try to explain the difference. Like they show Rey doing things where it's like she's making the more empathetic, she's making the more thoughtful decision every time. So it's like, by the end of this movie, I was like, okay, well, at least they did a little bit of work there to make her feel like a chosen one.
Wait, Dave, are you're saying that this is the first time we've like seen Sith manipulate life and death? In Revenge of the Sith.
That's when they talk about Darth Plagueis.
I know. I know. I was trying to like. I thought you were like, I had a really good joke. Is all you were like. I thought you were saying Rise of Skywalker is the first time, and I was like, did you ever hear about the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise, bro? All right.
No, anyway, but that's like the thing that's introduced because in the Menace and Attack of the Clones is like, oh, he's a Sith, but it's not like the Sith like can control the power of life and death. That was the X factor we didn't know about. What turned Anakin in the tragedy of Darth Vader was, you know, what is so seductive that General Anakin Skywalker will turn against, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Padme, whatever, and it's saving Padme from dying. It's not being able to manipulate who lives and who dies, and that is the ultimate Sith power that we see here, where it's like if force healing's the positive side of that because you're giving some of your life force willingly to help a person out, the sort of like force vampirism we see him do on the dyad is the Sith version of that. And it actually restores his body for some reason.
It's like a good face cream.
Yeah. It's like an extremely good face cream.
Except it had to be extracted very painfully from two young people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Force dyad. It's a thing. should we talk about Luke and Han and Leia?
Let's.
And how this movie uses them.
Sure. Right. What one would you like to start with?
Oh, this movie uses
all three of them.
Okay, let's start with Luke, and I'll just say I actually don't hate Ghost Luke. I hate that Ghost Luke has that lightsaber line because it feels like a really unnecessary dig. But like the attitude that Ghost Luke has in this, even though it might seem contradictory to the attitude of Luke in the bulk of The Last Jedi, I feel like it's in keeping with where he gets by the end of the film. So yeah. To me, this is the one instance where it like doesn't really feel like the lightsaber line does, but Luke and his counsel of Rey feels in keeping with the enlightenment that he achieved at the end of the last film.
I agree that he should counsel her, and I like the thing about fear. I don't like the retcon that Leia always knew, because it makes the Force Awakens dumb, and it makes parts of the Rise of Skywalker or the Last Jedi dumb, because Luke trained Ben and still had a moment where he like wanted to kill him, even though he like knew it was going to happen. I mean, like always in motion, the future is. I get it, but if it scared Leia the fuck off enough, why did she then turn around and give Ben over and like not? Why did Han not tell Han? In the novel, she doesn't tell Han that she's worried about Ben turning to the dark side. In the Princess Leia of Alderaan, in the Bloodline novel, because she's like, Han's not force sensitive, he won't understand. Which might be important to remember for this movie, I don't know. So it just seems weird to be like, I always knew who you were, you always knew who you were. And you came to this island asking...
And a whole bunch of other people also kind of knew who you were.
You came to this island asking who your parents were. I let that piss you off to the point of leaving. And then all it really took was somebody telling you, yelling at you to remember harder. And then it'll come back. Seemed odd to me. But in terms of...
Yeah, and if the message is, as it is in this movie, to Rey is like, don't be afraid of who you are, then why were they keeping it a secret?
Right.
Yeah. Like the whole thing is like Rey has to overcome the fact that she truly is like this, you know, her lineage is like the most evil fucking dude of all time. So it's like, why are we waiting for to tell her that?
And it's
crazy.
Originally, how this was described in the leaks, it was a lot more about Leia. It was, you know, basically Luke talking about like Leia was going to reform herself you know in the Force and that you know she had trained to be a Jedi and that she's like Lady fucking Vader. Like Leia's the one who's been through this before, not Luke necessarily, even though like obviously
dark side. But like that would have connected even more of the I'm your pseudo incestuous child by your maybe great grandpa. It seemed a little sloppy, even though like when I'd first read the leaks, that scene seemed like it was really going to work for me. And I it must be part of like a weird reshoot thing. One, because Luke's wig's really bad. And two, the whole trailer we got, the first trailer we got has Luke talking about death. Like no one ever really dies. And that line's not in there anymore. Luke just shows up and makes a snark thing about not throwing away your lightsaber. So it feels like they got real close to doing something I would have liked with Luke, and then settled for just giving me the music cue I wanted with the X-Wing rising out of the water, which thank you very much. That's exactly what I wanted, John Williams.
Okay, but here's the question that plagued myself and my roommate on our way home. This is the first question we talked about was, it had to smell terrible in that X-Wing, right? Like, God. Red 5 has seen better days. Yeah. But it's like Rey is flying that thing.
Maybe she force healed the X-Wing. Like maybe a power we haven't seen yet is like force cleaning. She like force Swiffered the X-Wing, yeah. force Lysol'd it. It's Listen, fine.
I watched her grab a ship.
It was so good. I love that part.
Just about anything. And I do like that that feels like some of the things they tried. They did try to push forward sort of what the powers are, what, you know, how strong could one get, you know, theoretically with the Force. And that's fun. It leads to fun visual moments. I like it.
Yeah. That is super positive. Just like I think Force projection worked for The Last Jedi. If your story calls for a very specific Force power,
which I'm fine with Force healing. I just think that, like, it's not super explained. Like, so Ben finds Rey dead.
Yes.
And then he force heals her.
Yes.
And then he dies. And why does she not force heal him? And then he disappears, so she can't force heal him. But why didn't Rey disappear when she died?
I mean,
her business wasn't finished. I don't know. Like, why? See, that's the other thing is, like, then they cut to a shot of Leia's body disappearing as well. So it's like, oh, once their story is finished, they can go. Like, because Leia didn't disappear right away either.
So Anthony has this quasi-theory, so that will take us to Han. I'm not really, we can be done with Leia, but I will just say that this did not work. None of the use of Leia worked for me, except for the hug that's in the trailer. But the copy-paste of Leia Force Awakens lines into the Rise of Skywalker script does not work
Never
for me.
Never underestimate a droid. Really what? And what do you mean?
And I'm very mad about young CGI Leia. I was like, I thought we all agreed we were not going to do that. We all talked about it, and we agreed. I gasped, and I, like, turned to Dave, and I was like, I mean... They said they weren't going to. Anyway.
I said good day, sir.
But Anthony Bresnikan has this interesting. Like, let's talk about Han, because Han is a weird one. Because, like, okay, what's obviously true is that they wanted Leia to have a central role in this film. They wanted Leia to be the one to bring Ben out of Kylo or back from the dead or however you want to put it. And then Carrie Fisher passed away, so they couldn't do that. So they called Harrison. They're like, Harrison, buddy, we know. You said, you gotta kill me. That's the only way I'll beat it. And we said we killed you, but like Carrie died. And so can you come back and do this scene? We were going to have Carrie do it. Can you do it? And he was like, okay, but I'm not going to shave. And they're like, okay, that's fine.
Also, I'm definitely not cutting my hair or using a comb.
Yeah. This is what you get. Slap a leather jacket on me. Let's go. All right. So that all happens, but like, how is Han there? Like, Kylo's thing, like, you're just a memory, right? Because Han doesn't have the Force. He's not a Force ghost. He's not Force projecting. None of that shit's true. He's just there. How are you there? You're just a memory. That's kind of yada yada. But
I think that's also the only way to explain that.
Well, it is. But no, but Anthony had a theory that I kind of like, which is that Leia made it happen. Because, like, you know, they have this whole thing where they're like, Maz Kanata is like, oh, Leia has to use all, it might take all her strength to reach her son. And so then we hear her say, like, Ben or whatever, and everyone stops and is like, what the fuck? but like maybe she's also like using whatever life force she has to like send Han there.
This feels like it's getting a little close to like Jon Snow was yelling go at the ice dragon.
Yeah, but like, but at least they put Kylo down a pit, so you couldn't say like Kylo is actually the one who defeated Palpatine. We're all like, no, it was Rey. Kylo was, Ben was down the pit. He didn't help. He helped.
Yeah. My interpretation of the Han thing is that the way we can tell it's just in Ben's head essentially is because he's not blue. Right. That was like the indication.
Well, yeah, it's not force, but it's like, what is it? So like what, you know,
I think that what they tried to do is it's a memory he's reliving, but he just does the thing on the walkway different. Like he, right. There's a okay. big mirror of the whole thing.
The dialogue.
Yeah, but he has to like let it go. But I do like the fact that Leia's involved somehow because she does stick around. To answer your canonical question, you have to have Jedi training to disappear when you die. Like more than Rey had. Like Qui-Gon Jinn levels of Jedi training. Which Leia apparently had.
You have to be a master.
But Kylo isn't a master.
But he trained under Luke in a Jedi temple.
But Rey trained under Leia.
Yeah, apparently she didn't teach her out of Force Ghosts.
Maybe feels, Leia grabbed on to convenient. Rey's soul and was like, stay there for a minute.
Hold on. I got a plan. This is like the end of Romeo and Juliet. You're just bluffing. Then he dies. Then you die. Then he dies.
Well, then there's my other thing that I brought up before the podcast, and now's the time to bring it up. If they're a dyad, if they're one force being split into two, and then Palpatine takes like...
Is that what that means?
Yes.
Okay. That's how they just had no idea.
That's how they describe it. They're like two in real life, one in the force or whatever. Palpatine takes like a ton of their power to get like thing. They're both like basically dead. Then Rey gives up that last bit by tapping into the Avatar Force and is able to, you know, like go away. And then Ben gives his last bit and then there's like nothing left over. The sum total of it took to make two full people, part of it's gone into Palpatine and been vaporized. There's only one left in them. So she like vampires away the rest of Ben Solo.
Well, but he's not. I don't like the use of vampire because he's like he gives it to her.
Right. I'm sorry.
He gives her his XP.
Right, but like not only his XP, but like his I don't know, like the his half of the last dyad. Life. Like they become
like
one
he finally. Definitely yeah, and that's why he's and not yeah. That was my line. And that's why he's not there at the end, is he's inside.
He's with her. He's the part that gives her last name, even though he wasn't, but...
Right. And he's in her saber.
I mean, he's of the Skywalker line.
Yeah, so he should be a part of the Force Ghost at the end, but he's not, so where is he? And that's my best interpretation of it, is they literally become like one person.
Follow-up question. Does Rey kill Palpatine in anger? Sure seems so, because she's like, like, that is that striking him down in anger? Is it not? How is it not? How is that not?
Is she even Rey at that point?
Oh, is she all the Jedi?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean...
Maybe she's striking him down with love for literally everyone else.
But also, she doesn't strike him down. She just reflects his shit back on him like Mace Windu. That seems to be like...
He strikes himself down.
That seems to be the way to kill Palpatine.
The loophole.
The Jedi-approved way of killing Palpatine is just reflecting his lightning back at him. But at least he melts this time, so, you know, next time we see Palpatine...
Yeah, they did the right thing not throwing him down a hole, because that did not work last time at all.
Exactly. Ooh, do you want to hear another cool fun thing that I found out today while trying to make myself feel better about weird things in this movie?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So Snoke always wore a ring that had a Mustafar rock and like these engravings of these four sages on it. And the only other time we saw the sages was in Palpatine's office in the prequel trilogy.
Oh my god.
So what if that's the fucking possession object?
All right. Can we say something more about Snoke for a second?
Yeah, Tub of Snokes.
What do we decode as the reason why? Like, what are they trying to say by saying that Snoke was just like a clone, I guess, or like a he was created by Palpatine in a lab, and he didn't matter at all. He was just a puppet. Like, what? That feel, there's a lot of moments in this movie where it feels like this movie is like a response to, obviously, to The Last Jedi, as we've talked about, but I can't tell what the response is.
So there's one like, person that could really help me clear this up, and somebody's going to ask him the question, thankfully. It's Andy Serkis, who says that there was something else he was told about Snoke when he was playing him that he has not revealed yet. I hope now he can. And we
so like this is it that Snoke is just like he was created in a jar.
No, I mean I don't know. It'd be interesting if that was and Rian Johnson like interpreted it in that way anyway, and so that's why maybe he was like fine to kill him off. Or
like Snoke was always like a puppet. He didn't really I do wonder. You know.
Yeah, I mean that feels right to me because once again, if you're talking about this trilogy being the end to all trilogies, like the idea of creating a war where you're secretly manipulating both sides is the prequel trilogy. So the idea that like he used the first, so Emperor Palpatine reforms his consciousness or whatever, like finds a whole Sith world. So Rule of Two's out the fucking window, becomes their god, and like starts manufacturing Snoke clones to take some of his ships, but not all of his ships, back to the universe to fight with.
But
Princess
in the meantime,
Leia
he's making a shitload more ships.
Yeah. Or I think those are the ships that he went with initially because they're Imperial Star Destroyers. They're not First Order Star Destroyers. So it's like that's all his old ships from the Empire. He created a whole second pointless First Order army to, I don't know.
Or did he create Snoke? Put him in the microwave, get him out, and then you like go forth and build up your own First Order.
What doesn't What doesn't make sense about the Snoke's in a tub, right? Is that I've seen some. I haven't read the Star Wars comics, but I've seen some like cells floating around, and there's like cells of Snoke. Like the wound in the side of Snoke's face has to do with like what happens when Luke attacks Ben. It's related to that. There's a cell of like Ben being like, oh my god, look what you know Luke did to your face or whatever. And he also has Snoke also has hair in that cell. And so I'm like, so how are these other Snoke clones now? Why do they look like later bald wounded Snoke? And also, but I will say this, if Snoke is literally a little clone puppet thing, then finally, at long last, that dumbass, stupid, higgity, chilty, jilty walk that he has makes sense to me.
Like he was made incorrectly in the factory.
He's got strings.
Does that mean that Snoke
Pinocchio
is only
is way around? You know,
that would be amazing.
He looks like
if
that.
Andy Serkis was performing that, is what I'm saying.
But it also is like he was only what like 30 years old.
Nope. Minimum, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless he didn't pre-exist.
At the most, he was like, 35, 40. He looked really shitty for being a 35-year-old, is all I'm saying. I say this as a person who was, until recently, 35.
If you guys are at all interested in exploring what a bizarro version of this looks like, I'll point you in the direction of some Dark Horse comics from the 1990s called Dark Empire and Dark Empire 2. That is about Palpatine, who created endless clones, consciousness jumping in between those clones and resurrecting himself. And the second one ends with him using super lightning to attack a fleet in the sky.
It sounds like all of those things got put into this movie.
It possibly could be, but it's interesting.
The lightning thing, obviously, the clones. What were the other two?
Oh, the consciousness jumping, which is what he
the consciousness
to,
jumping
like,
feels very akin to like him or I guess Snoke, but ultimately Palpatine, I guess we're led to believe, bridging the two of them in their minds. So like if because like now we have to assume that if Snoke did it, the Emperor wanted him to.
Right. But also was unaware that they were a dyad while doing that because plot convenience.
Man, they totally missed it.
I totally missed that they were a dyad all along. So the other thing that is interesting about this movie is if there is a whole planet of Sith, which are now a race apparently instead of just two of them, what was Rey rising to meet? Was she rising to meet, like, the Sith planet? I'm very confused about the history of this, but I guess I don't have to worry about it because we stopped it. We stopped the Final Order, guys.
Sure. For now.
It's just the Force is just like, they're like, God, we have to try for like the third time to find someone who will balance out the Force against this one fucking dude.
Yeah, basically.
The Emperor.
Anakin even says that, like, become the chosen one like I did is what he says is, or something
well,
like that.
Well, because it was like, voice mission. It was like, you know, in the prequels, they sort of knew that somebody, some Sith guy was kind of out there rumored, and it was like, oh, okay, so now you believe Anakin's the one who's going to fix this. And they've just, it's Rey's the only one who can actually come in and do the job.
Yeah, she did. Melt him down, the skeleton.
Yeah, good for her.
But
she won
why do you think, so when Rey has this moment where she hears all the voice of all the Jedi, and we should say, for people who are listening who don't know, like, she hears all these voices, there's Anakin, there's Qui-Gon, there's Obi-Wan, both the Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor version, there's Yoda, there's Mace, Mace Windu, like, is there
Samuel L. Jackson.
But there's also animated series characters, Ahsoka Tano, Kanan, like, and so this is a moment where it's like, hey, all these things that you've been watching that are canon, we've found a way to put them in here. But also, like, it was pretty stupid of JJ to be like, hey, Ahsoka Tano has a cameo in this movie. It's like a voiceover. 2 second voiceover. Like, it sucks. But also, that's such a thievery of Avatar. Like, that's such of an Avatar moment. And it's, and I'm talking about, like, The Last Airbender and Korra. It's ridiculous what a ripoff that is. So,
and it comes right after her opening shot, sitting in the Avatar pose with the rocks around her and everything. It's almost like,
yeah,
they knew what they were ripping.
Wait,
off.
And it also comes from, like, one line in The Last Jedi, right? Isn't the thousand generations live in you now? Like,
that's in the trailer, but not
that's
in the
this movie.
No, it's not in the movie.
Does he say it? Okay.
Does
I thought
Luke
he said
it.
I thought he says it when she's, like, on her back and staring up.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he does say it in the voiceover line. I thought.
No, he doesn't say it in The Last Jedi. It's in this only.
It's in this movie.
And it was part of the trailer that took place with the desert fight. But yeah, that's sort of like another new Jedi power is there's an Avatar state where you could tap into the strength of your all Jedi, which implies, as Emperor Palpatine says, like, I am all Sith now, so the rule of two becomes, I guess, the rule of one. Or he's, I don't know.
But wouldn't it be better if he had said, I am all the Sith, and this is Anthony's idea, but, like, I'm going to steal it because he didn't say it on air. If she had just said, I'm nobody from nowhere, isn't that better than I am all the Jedi?
Yeah.
I'm all the Sith.
Like, from
I'm
a storytelling
nobody?
Standpoint, yes. Absolutely.
Yes! Better! She should be nobody. Rey Nobody. I love Rey Nobody.
Nobody's been here for a long time.
I feel like,
what's your name?
Going back to the beard bet, I've never thought that this was, like, the best thing for them.
No, I know.
It's just, that's definitely what they were going to do. I honestly was sort of taken aback with how much it felt like J.J. Abrams was, like, having a conversation with the audience about how everybody was feeling about Star Wars at the moment, instead of just, like, making an entertaining movie. Like, it just felt like so much was specifically driven toward, you know, the things that people said they didn't want, or the things that the people said they were missing from The Last Jedi. It's like wild. It's wild to see that came all the way through.
While we're on Exegol, last two lightsaber fights are badass. With the pass of the legacy saber when Ben comes back, and then Rey blaster handing. Those Sith troopers. I was
great stuff.
Laughing.
I'm not sure where those guys were like 10 minutes ago. Those Sith troopers that show up. It's like all of a sudden there's my interpretation as I was watching it was that like most of the Sith things in the background were like the ghosts of the Sith. But Am I to believe that those were, that's supposed to be like a real planet of Sith people?
I think so.
I thought it was just like him putting on a show. He's like, look at all these ghosts that I have inside of me.
They like describe it as like a secret Sith world. I like that interpretation, Neil, because it doesn't make the Sith suddenly a race that got real.
I don't think they're real. They seemed very ghosty to me.
Which makes the part where the troopers show up a little weird, because it's like, wait, where have these guys been?
Well, yeah, they have all the red Sith troopers up on the thing, too, so we know that exists. But you're right, we don't see them because we have the, you know, big intimidating arena reveal initially.
Mm-hmm. That being said, whenever they show up, they're like singing choral music.
Yeah, I was like, these are the spirit choir of the Sith.
All right. What else do we want to talk about? Dominic Monaghan, complete waste of time, or we're glad that he at least has a Star Wars paycheck?
I mean, can it be both? Because I'm very happy for Dom Monaghan. Keep getting them checks. Keep answering the phone when JJ calls. But he does get caught up in what I think is one of the bigger problems this movie has, which is just like, it is exposition dump upon exposition dump upon exposition dump, and he gets one of the dumber ones.
I think that not only does he get a dumb one, but I think his presence being there kind of erases Billie Lord from this movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's usually her position, especially in The Last Jedi, who kind of like grew her as like a person who could have her own opinions within the Resistance. Here she says like one line, I think, that's very obviously not on the same set as everybody else. And then otherwise is present, but isn't like actively present because Dominic Monaghan's saying the stuff that I think she would usually.
There was some question, you and I talked about this. There was some question of like, that JJ gave an interview and like, how much Billie Lord felt like she could do emotionally with the like CGI version of her mom. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think there was a question of like Billie Lord not feeling, not like uncomfortable, just sort of like emotionally overwhelmed by having to act against like a digital ghost of her mother. And so like,
against no one, but it's also your mother. That does sound like that would be really hard.
Yeah. If it was a good way out.
No, I'm just saying it's possible. That's why Billie Lord isn't in this movie more. I also think that they used her for at least young Leia body double. I think that's true. But you're right. I mean, I think you don't need, and like what really annoys me. Oh, here's, we're going to talk about something I really did not like. Brownie points for having a gay kiss at the end in the background, fuzzily in the fuck of this party at the end. And I'm just like, no, fuck you. You cannot do this like Finn and Poe dating shit on all the publicity tours. I'm not saying I ever thought Finn and Poe would be together. I'm just saying Oscar Isaac and John Boyega played up this shit all the time about like Finn and Poe and now they were husbands and blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, here's your gay representation. Once again, it's like a perfect metaphor for the cowardice of this movie. They're like, hey, people who want gay representation, are you happy now? And we're like, no, we're not. Just like make actual characters gay, you cowards.
Just all admit right. that hug at the end is the beginning of a throuple.
make Neil and all of us happy. So.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, you can't keep doing that if you're Disney. Like, I get it. At least it's like not the director this time. Who's
Joe Russo's a gay dude.
But like,
what if my character has a husband?
It's 2019.
Yeah.
Okay. Disney.
Okay. And why do you think why do you think they have this thing with Finn is going to like declare his love for Rey, but he doesn't like a couple times in this movie if it never has an actual payoff in the end?
I think there's more to Act 3 in this movie that doesn't exist anymore and instead becomes a weird line Lando says to Jaina and other things.
Yeah, you want to talk about that, about like what you think?
Oh, there were early rumors that Jaina, because she was a child soldier, was actually taken, like the other First Order soldiers, from her family, and that family member would be Lando, who never left Passana because that was the last place he saw his kid. So in a sort of reverse Rey and a link to Finn, Lando's daughter would pop up to sort of join the rebellion. Obviously, at some point in this movie, they realized they did not have time for all of that. And instead, at the end of the movie, Lando has that "let's find out where you came from" line.
They're like, shit, we already greenlit a Disney Plus series.
Yeah, that's like weird. Yeah, I guess it could be a Jaina Disney Plus series. Jaina and Finn, I guess. Jaina and Finn free the slave children. If Billy Dee Williams does a Disney Plus series, I will have to watch, because that seems unlikely. That just seems like...
Does it?
I think...
I don't know. If I were Billy Dee Williams, I'd be looking to cash those checks.
I think this,
and
this
the
is...
the checks from the Disney check, Plus right? are just as good.
Fair.
I mean, he looked like he was having such a good time in this movie.
Well, he does good work with the animated, when he voices his animated Lando too. So if there is a post Rise of Skywalker animated series development, as one of the two Mystery Star Wars animated series being developed, I could see that happening. But a live action one seems...
I don't know. One where he's just sort of like pops in and out every once in a while, like, you know.
Oh, happy life day. Fuck your mom. It's just, every episode is that Jaina brings a new child back to Lando, and he's like, yep, that one's mine too.
I mean, you know, it's
also follow up. I apologize. I definitely said her name wrong earlier. I think I said Jannara or whatever, but I think that's on the movie, not on me.
Yeah.
And the way the movie uses
her. I could not have told you her name. But I think how you know that moment doesn't quite work is that I was actively questioning, like, wait, why is Lando so interested in her right now? Is he hitting on her? Like, because it's like there's nothing to suggest that, well...
Oh, another black person. What planet are you from?
There's nothing other than the fact there are two black people to suggest that he is in any way related to her. So I was like, is Lando, like, trying to pick up younger women at this, like, we just won the war party? Which kind of fits... It's kind of
Let's
Lando
find out where
style,
you came from. Where do babies come from with Lando Calrissian and Jaina, the former stormtrooper?
Yeah, Finn's second girlfriend. third love, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, also, yeah, was there a time in the movie where I was ready for that third revisiting of... Okay, so the second time... Finn calls them out in like the sand worm tunnel, right? Like, what were you gonna say?
Yeah.
And then Poe. And he's when Poe's not here, and Finn's like, yeah, when Poe's not here, which kind of sets up that Poe would have been there, so it was maybe supposed to happen during the three-way hug. But then it just you have to have another awkward scene that explains why Finn doesn't move to Tatooine at the end. Which we didn't have time for.
So that's a follow-up question. Like, the music that plays over the ending is called what? A New Home, or just Home, something like that?
A New Home.
A New Home. Like A New Hope. Yeah. Yeah, I get it. So like, fucking Rey has moved to Tatooine.
She likes that's desert environments. She knows how to get shit done there.
So she's back. So like,
she's moisture farming.
So she lived on a desert planet all alone, and wanted a family and wanted to belong and wanted adventure and wanted to leave. And she wound up on a desert planet alone with BB-8.
She is the first Skywalker to not hate sand in the entire line.
Wait, so the implication is that at the end of the movie, Rey moves there? I thought she was just like there visit and bury the lightsabers.
Me too, until I saw that track name, A New Home. So, yeah.
She goes to scavenge out the Skywalker legacy like she was scavenging in the beginning of the movie.
Okay. Can we check in with the droids? How do we feel about the droids in this movie?
Why does Poe go into the final battle with R2-D2? He's his astromech droid.
It's a great question.
Because BB-8 likes Rey better now.
BB-8 had to open a trapdoor
on a Star Destroyer with no yaw. Which also, BB-8 is the bad. If you're going to send a droid on that mission, you send R2-D2, who can fly, and who is not a ball. You send him on the tipping Star Destroyer. You don't send BB-8. Anyway.
Okay, and also, I've seen a lot of hate directed at Dio, the new droid, who is voiced by J.J. Abrams. I actually kind of like Dio.
He's so polite.
It got an audible chuckle from me when he goes, no, 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 thank you. That made me laugh. I laughed. So, good job, J.J., you made me laugh.
Yeah, Dio's fine. He's literally an exposition robot voiced by the director.
Do you want to talk about Kylo Ren and when he says his lines with his mask on, and also how many lines Ben Solo has?
Ben Solo has one line. The true Ben Solo?
What is it?
Ouch.
Yeah, what is it? He just says, ouch. Did you realize that, Neil, that Ben Solo does not, like, once he throws the lightsaber away, he says nothing for the rest of the movie except for ouch, which also made me laugh. But that's it, so...
The silent Ben Solo, which is
but he does so much acting.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I actually like. Just like the Ben Solo's this weird mystery that can forever be a good person, since we don't have to like flashback and watch him be whiny Luke Skywalker or whiny Anakin Skywalker. He had a very dark life as Kylo Ren, but a lot of work's done post thing, definitely.
It's a little clunky. It's clunky.
It's one of those things that I didn't notice it until Joanna brought it up, that was like the only thing he said, or that he might not say anything, and then we remembered ouch, and I kind of like that. But the first thing that you were alluding to is J.J. Abrams, Mystery Box J.J. Abrams, Mystery Box J.J. Abrams, who cleared the set so Benedict Cumberbatch can say the name Khan, even though that's obviously who he was playing, decides really quickly to put a mask on Adam Driver for reasons I'm convinced is that there's a person on that stage saying nothing for
all
the shots.
Here's what I'll say. You told me that, and I related that to Anthony Breznican. And Anthony Breznican talked to someone, I won't say who, at the premiere, who said they were there when they filmed the scene of Kylo saying Palpatine was your grandfather.
Ooh.
So it did get filmed. It was an ADR.
Well, then.
So.
I do think it's a weird decision to put him back in the mask.
I think it doesn't completely discredit your point, which is like there could have been just plenty of ADR. They could have just like tweaked other things about it. You know what I mean? So like I think your point stands, that the mask allows them to have Kylo say whatever they want, and Kylo, who gives three different exposition dumps. Like I mean, this movie's choppy as hell. It doesn't always make sense to me, but I kind of do love that, like, no matter where Rey goes, they don't really explain it, but, like, eventually Kylo will be there, too.
Yeah.
Oh, and Kylo's here.
Well, he keeps
dipping
into her mind and pulling objects through it.
Yeah.
Because they're force flirting. They've been force flirting. That's what we're calling it.
Who gave you this fucking necklace? I didn't give you this fucking necklace. Who's giving you jewelry?
Who's giving you jewelry?
He's the worst boyfriend, but he also dies at the end, so it kind of works out pretty well for Rey.
I honestly like this for Ben. I wanted this. I like the idea of what they call I don't know if Lindsay Romaine coined this term, but the idea of Ben-demption. I like the idea of Ben-demption, but I didn't think that he gets to live afterwards. It's as you say, it's rhyming with Return of the Jedi. So he just gets his wish finally. He gets to be Vader. He's like, finally, I'm my grandpa. It's all I wanted.
He switches teams and dies.
And I get to like save, the hottie with the body, which is Luke in Return of the Jedi and Rey in this. And then I die. That's it. So, you know, so I'm pretty, you know, but once again, it's the middle ground. They're like, okay, the Reylos get their kiss, but they don't get the happily ever after. Like, here's another middle ground. Is everyone pleased? And the Reylos go, no. the, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it is, it's like, I can't imagine a way into Kylo or Ben Solo being able to live. Like, there's just,
I think
that's the thing about Star Wars, is like, the bad guy spends at least two full movies doing the worst shit. You know, like, he doesn't get to live. That's not how these things work.
I think if you do, I don't think that he should have lived. But I do think there's a way you could do it if you do more work to distinguish Ben Solo being one person and Kylo Ren being another. Just the way as you try to make Anakin Skywalker one person and Darth Vader another. You know what I mean? And they try to do that in this movie, right? When he's like, when Kylo says to Han, "Your son's dead." And Han's like, "No, Kylo Ren's dead. My son is back." Like, you know what I mean?
J.J. Abrams was like, "I had this perfect mask metaphor where when the mask was on, he was Kylo Ren. And when the mask was off, he was maybe vulnerable." And then the whole second movie, he took off the mask and was so damn evil.
But Ryan's just like, "I'm sorry, Adam Driver's hot. We need to see his face."
Don't you want to see him emote?
Did you guys have a callback that worked for you? Like, your favorite, like, reference or moment is for you, Dave? Is it the X-wing?
Yeah, the Yoda in the Force coming back is good, but that and Qui-Gon Jinn being part of our chosen Jedi, Liam Neeson taking himself into this movie for one line, justice for Qui-Gon.
How about you?
I do like the X-wing. I like Red 5 showing up, although the smell would be a problem for me. I love that Wedge is in there.
Yeah, Wedge showing up.
Yeah, put Wedge in there. Why not?
I like. I made a little noise, I believe, when Wedge.
Yeah, it's like there's some. It's this that will ultimately be the legacy of this movie. Is like there's some good stuff in there. There's good callbacks, but then there's like not good callbacks or like not great cameos.
His wife Nora Wexley is never going to forgive him for showing up too late to save her son Snap Wexley.
Wow.
Yeah, Wedge Antilles has a whole backstory now.
Where's that Disney Plus series?
My favorite is Chewie getting his medal. Though, what's interesting is in the trailer shot, it's Leia holding the medal, not Maz.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
It really is going to be one of those like all-time what-ifs. I mean, we were just talking about the Ben Solo redemption, and I think that it's possible this would have been a very different movie if Carrie Fisher would have been alive to be in that scene instead of Harrison Ford, and to, you know, because I think there is, you know, the Star Wars has been a lot about daddy issues, and at no point has like a mom come in and tried to fix it, and I think that would have been a really interesting way to twist that. You feel like there are some of the pieces there in this movie to where that's what they were going to try to do. And, you know, unfortunately, couldn't
see
happen.
It. Yep. You can see it. And like Star Wars is like all bad dads and dead moms. And it would have been really nice to see that good mom energy like come through, which, you know, they tried the best they could with what they had to make that happen. I mean, all right,
at the end, we would have gotten like Force Ghost Luke and Force Ghost Leia helping to defeat the Emperor, because we also have the hanging Chad, a see you around kid. And then Luke Skywalker never sees him again.
Not even as a Force
Ghost. He could have just haunted his ass the whole time. Been like, "Don't go to Exegol, boy."
Do you think Adam Driver was just like, "I guess, what I do, do you think he was just like, I'm not doing it. No more reshoots. No, I'm not going to go be a happy family."
Well, you think though that Mark, they would at least like, if they could cut out Carrie Fisher from all the hours of footage they have of her, don't you think they could have cut out Adam Driver if they really wanted to?
I do like that Ben Solo's like last stand is in this like shitty loose black t-shirt that he used to wear under his like cool black outfit. He's like, "Oh, dyed my undershirt."
What's your plan here, buddy? I don't know. I'm going to run there real fast. And then I'm going to tell her, I don't know, but I'll know when I get there.
Ouch. Oh, the neck's all stretched out. This isn't a good look for me.
Like, it still has a hole in it. She couldn't fix that too.
All right. If someone that we saw in this movie should have a Disney Plus show, who should be? And you don't get to say Zori Bliss and Babu Frick, because that's mine. So who should have their own show?
I have one. I'm more ready to watch the young Poe Dameron Chronicles, because I think, you know, there's probably some interesting, like, they allude to Poe having a dark side, obviously, in this movie.
Spice running?
So, like, the spice running Poe Dameron, because that character was, you know, he had to go through some things in The Last Jedi to learn about leadership. And I think they pay a little, some of that off here in this movie. But I feel like he was a more interesting character through the course of, like, you know, the little mission, the missions they were on, the ones where Poe was, you know, the most active were sort of the more engaging ones. So also he can do a crossover with the Zori Bliss show.
Well, I was thinking Poe Dameron, like Oscar Isaac, occasionally cameos in the Zori Bliss and Babu Frick.
Sure. So yeah, that's true. Oscar Isaac, you know, he's a busy guy. He can he can do whatever he wants. So,
you know, what about you, Dave?
Let Rose Tico start the new government.
Love it. So, like,
let her age into a Mon Mothma type person who, because she has the philosophy of saving something you love and not destroying something you hate, she's the best person to create that. The new princess.
No, it's like an election show where Rose is running and that's her platform, and Finn is somehow now running against her, and he's running on a fatalist platform where he's like, we should all just kill ourselves.
Is it like Veep, or is it like House of Cards, or like what are we talking about?
I'm thinking here? House of Cards. I'm thinking it gets dark, because Rose, if I were Rose, and I can only speak for myself here, I would not be happy with the way Finn has treated me. Mm-mm. Since I saved him from killing himself on Crait.
And he's like, guess what? I'm going to do it again.
And he's like, guess what? I'm going to continue this dangerous behavior. Also, I have a new girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't be happy. I mean, Rose has a lot of reasons to be unhappy here.
She rides horses.
Yeah. And Rose is like, I freed a bunch of horses. And it was awesome.
Yeah, I think your Poe Dameron thing should be like very Sons of Anarchy. I think I want my Zori Bliss thing to be, I don't want the Americans. That's just a Carrie Russell association, but like Zori Bliss and Babu Frick.
She sort of runs the crew.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. I don't know why I decided I was asking all the questions here. Last question. More a prompt, like, Dave, you said something I thought that was really interesting when we were hanging out at the after party. Neil, I know that you
wish
you'd been
there.
Why are
they playing Michael Jackson's PYT? Don't they know this song can't be played at parties anymore?
Dave was like, that's a choice. Neil, I wish you had been there for a number of reasons, but chiefly because Dave and I were seated just a few seats behind Pedro Pascal in a literal bathrobe. So it was a lot.
Wow. He would have stolen my look as well.
We were in the Mando section for sure. Yeah. There was a moment when like Gina Rodriguez sat down and like, or Gina Carano sat down and Dave was like, is that? I was like, oh, that definitely fucking is. and then slowly but surely we just like were surrounded by Mando people. But
was Baby Yoda there or?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. Now I'm jealous.
Yeah, Dave smuggled him out in his little popcorn bucket. Okay, so Dave, you said this thing about Ryan giving us a Star Wars that like meant something. Do you want to like elaborate on that at all?
Yeah, so like The Last Jedi can be read as a commentary about the Star Wars franchise. And I feel like I maybe said this like last week. But the whole idea that George Lucas is presenting a singular vision is George Lucas being obsessed with some very specific George Lucas things. He wants to push technology forward. He wants to explore the Campbellian monomyth. He wants to, you know, revisit serials like I've talked about before. And Rian Johnson came in and he's like, I'm going to make a Star Wars movie. And like Rian Johnson does with a lot of his movies, he starts by being like, what aren't you going to expect from this genre? And what do you expect from this genre? And are there points where those two things are the same, on an axis? Are there Yoda, we are what they grow beyond. That is the true burden of all masters. that is able to acknowledge that the original Star Wars trilogy is amazing, but that also we can't just all be movies made from 1977 to 1984 and get away with 1983 and pretend like that's okay. Star Wars is evolving, and in order to move forward, it had to like kill the past and democratize the Force. And these were all ideas that were deep enough and divisive enough to provide the type of conversation we had, which wasn't always the greatest because assholes know how to amplify their voice real well through like YouTube dumb algorithms. But it was a Star Wars movie you were able to have deep level conversations with at the same level that, you know, like Yoda's description of the Force in Empire Strikes Back is vague and beautiful and works because it's about being luminous beings and not, it's basically a better version of the speech he gives to Anakin, which is like, you can't care about people dying. It's like the Force is around us and it binds us and it's everything. There are some like little highlights that push through in a monomyth structure, but it's not an entire movie dedicated to trying to say something about what the story is while it's being told, which I feel is what The Last Jedi is. Rise of Skywalker has so much plot that it really needs to spend all of its time dealing with that. And that's much more in the serialized structure. That's your Gunsmoke. That's your Flash Gordons, because you need people coming back for each installment. Or in this case, not stopping to think about the previous scene before they're thrust into the next big explosion. So it's kind of like this Star Wars movie had the possibility that it could have said something big about what all Star Wars means. And I think the closest it gets to trying is when the fleet shows up and General Pride says something like, where'd they get this fleet? And someone said, it's not all fleet, it's just people. And that's close, but that's not the entire movie is wrestling with other ideas like child abduction or giving up hope, or like when you could rally to an ally with like a ridiculous cause. And Luke's all about like facing fear, but also like, does your bloodline contain you? And it jumbles all these ideas together, and I don't think ultimately manages to make a statement out of any of them. A lot of people are going to find meaning in the platitudes, which it might sound like is what I'm doing with things that Yoda said. But I really do feel like it's different for Rise of Skywalker as compared to The Last Jedi. And The Force Awakens, I don't know, had the magic, it's true, all of it line sort of worked for me. So I give that one a little bit of a pass. And also because it answered, or it opened up all these huge questions. And the ones that Rise of Skywalker decided to answer were a little too definitive of answers for me. Rey's a Palpatine is a really fine point to put on a sentence that could have been an ellipsis.
Neil, what do you think about like The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker and meaning that we find there?
Yeah, well, I agree with most of what Dave said. It's that The Last Jedi, like I said, was asking more complex and interesting and difficult questions and had more to say on the subject of Star Wars, where it was like, you know, JJ sort of came in and was like, all right, well, let's finish this up like a Star Wars thing. You know, let's do this in a way that feels extremely familiar. And maybe that's what will sort of, you know, bring balance to people feeling good about Star Wars again. Cause I think that's all, you know, that's all Disney really wants. They want people to feel good about Star Wars, and they want as many people
money
physically to buy tickets on opening weekend as possible. That's it. There should be no question about their motivation here. So I think that, you know, it was probably part of the mandate or part of the discussion when J.J. Abrams signed back onto this, that it's like, we want someone who's going to close this in a way that is safe. You know, like we want to close this more safely than, and in my mind, that reflects sort of the way Star Wars was born, which is like, there's a weird one in the middle there. And that's always going to be the one that people go back to and are like, this is the best one because of how challenging and interesting and thoughtful it is. I think people are going to end up feeling like this as they do about Return of the Jedi, where it's like, it's probably not the best one of the trilogy, but it's fine to close out.
I'm not watching it. I watched Attack of the Clones.
Right, like,
yeah, I'm watching Rise of Skywalker.
It's still a movie that has enough good stuff where you could throw it on in the background and every couple minutes catch yourself stopping and watching a sequence or watching a moment, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, emotionally heavy moments in this movie that some of them work and some of them don't. And it's really just like a big mixed bag. Yeah. So I don't know what the Rise of Skywalker seems to be saying, like a million different things at once, which only fits the theme of having all the Jedi's inside you.
Yeah.
So it's like, they're all talking to me.
Well, they try to drum meaning by repeating lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so the repeated line, right, that's trying to, the platitudes, as Dave was talking about, is like, there's more of us than there are of them. Mm-hmm. You know, like the platitude, if you want to call it that, of The Last Jedi is like, you know, we'll do this with love rather than hate. That comes from Rose. And then this is just like, there's more of us than there are of them. And I don't know, like, if you want, like, I really liked it, when Dave brought this up on the live show we did, lo these many weeks ago, about the original trilogy and this idea of, like, every trilogy of Star Wars is about the war that we're fighting at the time. And, you know, how, you know, Bush in Iraq informed the prequel trilogy, and how, like, the scars of Vietnam, you know, and World War II, actually, impact the original trilogy. And what I really liked about the idea of the sequel trilogy being about, like, the fandom wars, you know what I mean? Because, like, Kylo Ren is this, like, Vader fanboy, and then you've got, like, Rose is this, like, optimistic fangirl, and Let the Past Die, like all these ideas about, like, fandom and cyclical, like, legends and stories and all this other stuff. And then you get to this one, and
it's about Trump.
If it's, well, yeah, I'll get to that in a second. But, like, if it's about anything in fandom, it's about, like, it's that South Park Member Berries episode. That's what this movie feels like. Remember that thing you like? It's here, but different. You know what I mean? Which is what people said about The Force Awakens, but I like The Force Awakens. So I don't know what to tell you. But then also, yeah, in this big moment when the whole, it's not the Rebel fleet, it's the Dunkirk little boats, Mamma Mia 2 moment, when everyone, like, shows up in their little scrappy little ships to help, and there's more of, and then it's like, yeah, on this day we're recording this, while we were recording this, Trump got impeached. FYI. So, you know, yeah, it just seemed to be about Trump, and I was like, I liked when it was about fandom, but now it's
interesting,
it feels like it's about Trump.
Having just re-listened to our Solo episode, every time we talk about Star Wars, there's something political happening. Because that was the night the Alabama Senate race was happening, and it ended up getting into the podcast, which I remember.
Yeah,
there was definitely a time here where Java was silently cheering, and I was like, "Oh, you were interested in that thing you heard one side of a Star Wars conversation about," and then I realized that Trump had been impeached. So for a second, I almost had her.
Yeah, it is fascinating, though. I think the great challenge that J.J. Abrams was left with is that, you know, the way these stories move, the way they move over the trilogy, or at least the way the original trilogy worked, was, you know, in the first movie, you have the hero discovering that the war exists. You know, the hero is like, oh, shit, I'm part of this huge war, and I got to join the fight. The second movie, there's a lot of stuff of thinking about, like, what the war really means. You know, especially in this trilogy, it's like the big question was, like, should we be doing this war? How are we fighting this war? Can we win this war? What's the existential thing behind? And then this one, the challenge is you have to actually have the war. Like, you have to finish the fight. And it puts a huge amount of pressure on this movie for it to have to finish not only the fights that are happening in this trilogy, but to then reach back and have to you know, finish the Palpatine story, the war that's been raging for 40 some years. It's interesting to me that they chose to make it harder than it could have been. Like, it actually is the easier path to not go back to Palpatine, to just let Rey be no one. It's just deeply fascinating to me that they continue to choose to make it harder for themselves.
Disney, 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 what will you do with the next era of Star Wars.
It's the ultimate form of Disney bravado to think that you can pull that off anyway.
As a way of sort of closing off, what do you think is coming next for dear old Star Wars? Does anybody have any good ideas? Joanna, you might have some business ideas.
Business ideas. Oh, it's fact. You mean who's going to be running?
Who's going to be running Lucasfilm?
Yeah. I do have this information for you. It is, so THR ran this report a couple weeks ago that, you know, that Kathleen Kennedy's tenure at Lucasfilm was going to come to an end, and that with the success of The Mandalorian, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, who are running The Mandalorian, would have sort of like a joint control of Lucasfilm, but they would not be a forced dyad. They would be a forced triad, because it, I mean, maybe this isn't the reason why, but I will say, because it looks real bad to push a woman out and put two white dudes in their place. They're thinking of also promoting Michelle, is it Jawar? I don't remember what her last name is. Jawan, maybe? who is an executive producer on this film.
And head of production for Lucasfilm overall.
And they brought her out on stage for this film, like, kind of conspicuously. I thought at the beginning, when we went to the premiere, they brought Michelle out on stage. And when I was doing this, like, Women of the Rise of Skywalker story that I was planning to do that got killed by Disney, don't worry about it. But, like, I was going to talk to the woman who edited it and the woman who did, like, the second unit directing, Victoria Mahoney and stuff like that. And Disney was, like, really, really wanted me to talk to Michelle as well. They were pushing that. So, like, I feel like that, you know, they really want to, like, position her as someone that we're aware of before they make the announcement official. But this is something that was reported in the Hollywood Reporter, so it's not, like... And, I mean, I don't know if you felt this way, Dave, but it felt like Kathy, when she gave the speech... Bob Iger gave a speech, Kathy gave a speech, and JJ gave a speech. JJ's speech was very funny. Bob Iger's was fine, and Kathy struck me as very sad. Like, she was crying. It was this whole thing. So, like, it really felt like a goodbye to me when we were watching that.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I also think that it's maybe, like, Kathy, her entire career is amazing, and she definitely pulled off, like I've said before in the podcast, the $4 billion gamble of making Star Wars movies without George Lucas. And I think I hope they were happy tears realizing she was taking a victory lap and not indication that she would still want to do more. But I also think that it's been very trying, and this one got across the line by the skin of its teeth, and the willingness of J.J. Abrams to take on a project that even he says that he probably wasn't best suited for or prepared for. So I think it's great that we had this era, but it's going to be interesting to see what the narrative is like when they go into the pivot for reals.
So Michelle Rejwan is Rejwan, and she's a J.J. Abrams guy. She produced Super 8. She produced Star Trek Into Darkness. Excuse me. She produced Force Awakens, and she produced Rise of Skywalker. And they actually only hired her at Lucasfilm June of this year is when she got hired to Lucasfilm, presumably from Bad Robot. So this would be like it's not JJ, but it's sort of like a JJ Favreau Filoni triumvirate or whatever, with Michelle standing in for JJ kind of thing. So, but I don't know if that's what they want to see in the future. I don't know what I mean, we should talk about the bad reviews really quickly before we go. Maybe we could have said it in the comm section, but like, I don't know that it's going to really matter. I still think this movie is still going to make a gajillion dollars, but like, you know, this is the first rotten score for a Star Wars film since The Phantom Menace on Rotten Tomatoes. As of this morning, it was at like 54%, I think. Rotten.
It's up to 58 now. Okay. I'm curious to see if it doesn't get up there. It'll be really fascinating because this, you know, this is obviously just the first wave, but
yeah. Our friend, Jacqueline, who works for Rotten Tomatoes, told me at the premiere, she's like, I asked her about Solo, like what Solo's score was, and she said fresh but just barely. And she thinks that this movie will be fresh but just barely in the end. And
that makes sense.
So, yeah. There you go.
Well, it's, I think the new triumvirate's interesting because it definitely looks like it could be Jon Favreau's going to do your live action, Dave Filoni's going to expand your universe, and Michelle's going to be Kathleen Kennedy version 2 and negotiate her way around the films. But I'm excited to see what the next step forward is besides, you know, just Mandalorian season 2. Because that's what we know at this point.
Don't be afraid of who you are, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Be weird.
You're going to have the Baby Yoda series. Don't maybe make something different. All right, guys. I think that's going to be it for The Rise of Skywalker. And it's going to be it for our main podcast, official podcast. We might, you know, actually pass the Bechdel test on Rise of Skywalker with another podcast. But
if you haven't been following her, Kristen, who was like, I think truly a highlight, as was our other guest, Lindsay Romaine, of our Star Wars Rewatch podcast. Kristen, who came on those podcasts and talked about everything she like didn't know about Star Wars, has for the last few days been watching all of the Star Wars and live tweeting it. And it's been some of the best things that I've ever seen. So at Kristen Nolene is her handle on Twitter if you haven't seen those. And she bought herself a ticket, just her, going solo, just like Han, to Rise of Skywalker Friday. So she just, as we were recording this, she was live tweeting The Last Jedi. So she just finished watching The Last Jedi for the first time today. And she just texted me literally just now, I love Star Wars, with a bunch of crying face emojis. And so she'll be seeing Rise of Skywalker on Friday. So I might talk to her and release that as a bonus episode for our Patreon subscribers of like everything Kristen Russo now knows about Star Wars or something like that.
So with that on the tip of our minds, instead of asking where people can specifically find your content online, I want to ask people, where can they find your best ofs list or best ofs podcast? I want your best ofs because we're going into a little bit of a dark period and then coming back out with Lost. Let's start with Neil Miller.
Wait, where people can find my list?
Your list or your company list, or point people to some bests. So,
yes, Film School Rejects, we're doing, hopefully by the end of this week, the 50 best movies of 2019. We'll see how quickly that happens. It's definitely happening before Christmas. But yeah, we're working on that. I've been desperately trying to catch up with screeners and just failing miserably.
And Joanna Robinson.
I think lists are bullshit, and I have not made any version of one. So find my lists in my heart.
Not even like on a scratch pad in your house somewhere.
No, I think, oh yeah, here's what I'll say. I think on Twitter or Instagram, I was like workshopping my top list by like arranging my screeners, in a top 10-ish order. So you can go look for that photo somewhere. It involves Parasite and Wild Rose and, Marriage Story and a couple other great films that I saw this year. Booksmart is definitely on that list. But yeah, I don't have an official one anywhere. But Dave, where can we find yours?
Oh, I'm going to be on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. We did our top 10 episode. It's coming out next week. And although David Ehrlich is not on it, we do get to meet the baby next week for the Fighting in the War Room.
Oh, you got to meet the baby.
Top 10s. But yeah, that's my bests. That's our bests. That was Star Wars season. Guys, it's been such a pleasure. We will see you on the other side with more Lost. Oh, yeah. Hey, guys, also, if you managed to spend the entire year not falling down, congratulations, you made it. You beat me, unlike last year. I'm ready to re-up, and I'll see you in 2020.